The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. So many ways to take us in. Whichever you choose, whichever you prefer, we appreciate them all the same. We're just grateful that you make us part of your morning. Gil Alexander is Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Sneaky spectacular show today. How you doing, man?
Sneaky spectacular.
Yeah.
Let's go.
They're spectacular, yeah. And then there's the spectacular that sneaks up on you. And you're like, whoa, that was spectacular. That's what we got today. You good?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Here's what happens today on the show. We will talk with we'll talk baseball with Mark Borchard. I try to hesitate to sort of update my March-April Cleveland Guardians bet because not everybody's on it, so not everybody's going to be that interested in it. But there's a bunch of folks who are, so we'll update that. We'll talk baseball with Mark Borchard. Paul Carr on the Champions League, the first leg of the quarters. First leg of the quarterfinals of the Champions League. We'll get into it with Paul Carr, who's been pretty scorching hot lately, as I recall. I think he's still on a heater. And we'll talk about the draw and how it really worked out pretty interestingly. We'll get into that with Paul. And then, of course, Masters full steam begins today. John Hasselbauer from the Lines at PGA Tout. He says that ironically on Twitter. We'll talk Masters with him. And then what has become a tradition here on a numbers game is once the college basketball formula clears, and by the way, we'll get into UConn here momentarily. UConn, of course, flourishing through the formula. You didn't need a formula for UConn this year, but the formula cashes again. We have this tradition where we then segue into Dave Tindall's Masters formula for a day. Not quite as tried and true. But he's hit the runner-up the last 2 years, just to give you an example. But he has a Masters formula. He goes through the last 10 winners at Augusta. It's based on, Kelly, ready for this? Age, world ranking, appearances, best finish, recent form, winning form, recent major form, last year's finish, whole bunch of stuff.
Yep.
We'll get into that with him.
Always a good
And it produces a name.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love what I think everybody who follows golf looks at what Dave puts out every year for the Masters and how this works out. And I think, especially for those people just getting into golf betting, it's always an interesting way of how do you kind of whittle down the field at the Masters, because a lot of that is what we're all doing just in different ways.
That's right. So we'll talk to Dave by the end of the show as well. We must begin with UConn. And we must begin. Congratulations to everybody who had a future on UConn. I only had them to get to the Final Four. I didn't have a future on them. But to those who did, mazel tov to you. Where do you begin? First back-to-back NCAA champs since the Florida Gators, 2006-2007. Before that, it was Duke back in the early 90s. Over the past two NCAA tournaments, UConn 12-0 straight up, 12-0 against the spread. And we're talking big spreads. I mean, this team was just unbelievable. First team in tourney history to win consecutive titles and cover in every game. Point differential last year in the tournament, remember six games, was plus 120. This year was plus 140. That's plus 260, Kelly. I've done the addition.
That's insane.
For UConn as a school, it's their sixth title in the last 26 years. Six titles. Only UCLA and Kentucky, the bluest of blue bloods, have more. 11 for UCLA and 8 for Kentucky. UConn has 6. Little UConn. And what can you say about this game yesterday other than Danny Hurley is the best coach of college basketball? If you didn't know it yet, I hope you know it now. UConn wins by 15, 75 to 60. They covered the 7-point spread. Listen, Zach Edey was great in defeat. I thought in the first half, I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be fascinating. Yeah. Like, this guy's on top. But then he just gassed. Mm-hmm. It felt like he gassed. I don't know if it was because of the pace in this game or just cumulatively, but 37 points in defeat. He did not get most outstanding player. So to the question of, hey, can a guy on a losing team still be, you know, still win most outstanding player? And I mentioned it hadn't happened since 1983 in Akeem Olajuwon with Houston when NC State won the title, beat them in the finals. The answer is probably no, it can't.
Yeah, I'm guessing it still wouldn't have happened, but I did think about, like, at the end of that game was those, like, what was it, the first 5 minutes of the second half where he did feel, it felt like he was out of sync, he was missing stuff. Like, he had a massive game with the potential to be a way bigger game. Like, he could have put up 45 easily in this.
I mean, Purdue scored 60 points, he scored 37 of them. And UConn, as we talked about, you couldn't have had a better juxtaposition of dominant player on losing team versus democratically great on the other side, right? And Tristan Newton ends up with most outstanding player for the Final Four, not Donovan Clingan. So congratulations to those who had Tristan Newton. And so, you know, what it, Danny Hurley basically, and he said this after the game, but you could tell it was happening during the game, which is, Zach Edey, we're going to let Zach Edey beat us. You get 25 shots, great. But each one of those is going to be a two. You're not going to beat us, even if you make all of them. You're not going to beat us shooting twos. We're going to prevent everybody else. I'm talking about Braden Smith and Lawyer and Gillis and Jones. We're gonna make sure that those guys don't beat us. Because athletically, he knew they're so much better than those guys. And if Edey somehow outplays Clingan by some, no big deal. Mm-hmm. To that effect, Purdue not only made one three-pointer, one, a breadstick, as we call it in tennis, one three-pointer. Forget that. They only got seven off. And that's the only stat you need to know from this game. Seven. Offensive rebounds obviously were huge, too, for UConn, much like it was for South Carolina on the women's side. But seven three-pointers attempted. You're never beating UConn with that in your stat line. And so congratulations again to all. And I would just want to say this. For me, obviously, Danny Hurley, like if you don't get that he's the best coach in college basketball, for me it's one and Nate Oates is two. And it's also why, like, I refuse to talk about John Calipari for more than 3 or 4 minutes yesterday, because he's a junior high school coach compared to these guys. Great recruiter, but he's just a junior high school coach. Seriously, when you look at the mastery of guys like Hurley and Nate Oates for Alabama,
How about Hurley helping out his guard on the court?
By the way, why wasn't that a tech?
I have no idea.
You can't touch your player on the court.
I have no idea. I was thinking the same thing.
How is that not a technical foul? Hurley's a spaz. Don't get me wrong. He's also a world-class spaz.
I was like, he's out of his mind. I was like, they are cruising to a blowout, and the guy's losing his mind on the sideline.
Every time there's a charge called on his team, he always says the guy's flopping, right? They put it in slow motion. He's like, flopper.
That was so bizarre. I mean, the ref is right there. He had to, like, almost go around the ref to, like, push his guard. I was like, wait, what is going on right now? What am I watching?
But he's amazing. And so for me, it was less about, you know, what that game, obviously, it wasn't quite Florida national championship blowout, but it was such a...
It was a good first half. It was a good first half.
Right. Alabama was competitive for a little longer, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
But... it just kept, all I kept thinking about was, where do you put this team historically? And I actually tweeted out yesterday. I said since the year 2000, because you can't, you know, when I was a kid, you can't compare, like, just to use the extreme, you can't compare early 80s teams, for instance, to these teams. Early 80s teams, obviously guys stayed 3-4 years, but like Carolina in 82 had Jordan, Worthy, and Perkins. Georgetown in 84 had Patrick Ewing and Michael Graham. Like, you can't compare these teams to what exists now. Those guys stayed for 4 years. Right. Jordan, 3 years in his case. So I just arbitrarily said 2000. Where does this team stand? And I got a bunch of answers from folks. By the way, doesn't have to be a winner of a championship. Just in terms of... So we had Dr. Bob on yesterday. So I texted Bob yesterday while the game was happening. Because we kind of grazed on it yesterday when it was on the show, even before the national championship. And I really want to know, because Aaron Schatz, when he's on with us, he's able to say 1991 Skins, 2007 Patriots, everybody else is third place or beyond, right? Bob's brain doesn't work that way. So Bob is like not interested in that kind of conversation like I am. So he's like, well, Gil, it'd be a huge project. It'd be really tedious to find that out because there's so many college basketball teams. And he's right, right? It's not a set of 32 teams like the NFL is. It's hundreds of college basketball teams. You could narrow it down. Right, you don't have to analyze all 300 plus. But you do have to analyze more than just who wins the tournaments. And so he did confirm. So he, by the way, I said to him, I go, all right, Bob, if it's too tedious for you, like, get an intern. He's like, I mean, I have to pay somebody, Gil. I'm like, how about your son? He's 6 years old, and so he just doesn't care as much.
I was gonna say, from like the betting standpoint, it is like, well, why do I care about like figuring out what this year's team versus this year's team, because they're never gonna play each other? So, it doesn't matter.
He's so locked into the day to day bets that it just doesn't occur to him. Call me crazy, but I still have some historical perspective on this stuff that I find interesting. But he did come to what he alluded to yesterday, in a case you missed it, that the answer for him off the top of his head, and he's been doing this forever, but since 2000, the quick answer off the top of his head was actually the 2015 Kentucky Wildcats, who did not win the NCAA tournament, but you may recall, went to the Final Four undefeated, lost to Wisconsin, and then Wisconsin got beat by Duke. But that Kentucky team...
The team was loaded.
That had the Harrison brothers, Andrew and Aaron Harrison. Willie Cauley-Stein was also like a huge cog. But Tyler Hulis,
Devin Booker,
Cat, they were all on that team. By the way, that might not have been the, if we go through stars,
that might not have been
the best Kentucky team either.
No, it probably wasn't.
Because there was a Boogie Cousins, John Wall team in there too, right? But that he said that's probably the team. He said, I remember having that team higher rated than almost anything that I've ever done. And he said, that's the only comp for this. And honestly, for a two-year run, I think Danny Hurley's right. With apologies to both Florida and Duke of the early 90s. I mean, Florida had Al Horford and Yannick Noah, this is dad, Joachim Noah. And then Duke, of course, had Leitner, Hurley, his brother, and Grant Hill for 2 years. This was basically revamping for UConn.
Yeah, really impressive.
Congratulations, man. Again, if you were smart enough to lock into UConn early and... who's to say he couldn't revamp and do it again if he sticks around? We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the NBA, golf, tennis. Seen a Calcutta this year for the Masters. That's next. Numbers Game, Visa, and the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready to tee off with a special Masters edition of VSiN's Long Shots today at 11 p.m. Eastern. It's Kelly Bidlin's longest day of the year, though he told me yesterday was longer. So maybe not. Join VSiN experts Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin, my man right here, as they break down the field, analyze the best bets, and uncover hidden long shots like the 50-1, for instance, that Stephen Yeager ticket that Wes cashed on the Houston Open a couple weeks ago, like the 65-1 on Batia that Matt cashed last week. From the favorites to the dark horses, we'll give you the inside scoop on every player and their odds of taking home the green jacket. Whether you're a seasoned golf bettor or just getting into the game, our expert panel will provide insights and strategies to help you make informed betting decisions. Tune into a special edition of Long Shots today at 11 p.m. to gain a competitive edge and maximize your winnings during this iconic golf tournament. Don't miss out on the exclusive Masters coverage we got at VSiN.com/Masters. VSiN, hey, Sports Betting Network. And by the way, after this show, I will be recording a special beating, not special, but a regular beating the book Masters preview, the 88th Masters. And I will be joined by two-thirds of the Long Shots crew.
Yeah, you will.
Kelly Bidlin and Wes Reynolds, along with Sia Najad. Because Matt Brown is, quite frankly, too much of a diva to come on the show. No, that's not true. He's going to Augusta.
He is going to Augusta.
That is an acceptable excuse.
Yes, that is an acceptable excuse.
This gentleman always participates in a Calcutta when the Masters come around. I'm curious if he's doing it again this year. He's the co-host of not only the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with the very funny Andy Molitor. Andy Molitor, which is gems of tweets. And he also co-hosts the NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast with Jay Croucher. Also amusing, but with an accent. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. How you doing, Drew? Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line.
I'm doing great. It's Masters Week. Tough to find anything to complain about. This is people hold up day one of the college tournament, that Thursday, Friday, as sort of their sports kind of clear my entire schedule. I'm just going to sit around and watch basketball all day. I kind of treat day one and two of the Masters that way. That's maybe more of my bag. And I don't know what it is about the setting, the presentation, the fact that you can watch, you know, specific holes and you can follow specific groups, get to know, you know, players, you know, games just by watching every shot and hearing them talk to their caddy. Like, you know, there's just so many things to enjoy about the first couple of days of the experience at Augusta. And so this is a pretty special week.
Yeah. And I think it's also just the old man that wants to sit on the couch in all of us, right? And just sit back there and watch a golf tournament with such a beautiful setting. So I brought up the word Calcutta, and it occurs to me that there's going to be a significant portion of the audience that has no idea what that is. Can you explain to folks what that is and if you are participating this year as well?
Yeah, well, it sounds like we're live. The big high stakes one that Rufus and Jeff do from Bet the Process is going to go. And we're going to do that on Wednesday. Calcutta is an auction. So you basically have a bidding system where a player is auctioned for fair value across the group. And then all of the auction, you know, all of the winning bids are put together to comprise the pot. And then the pot is divided up where the winner gets something like 25% and the second place gets 12 and blah, 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 all the way down to usually the top 12 all get some cash prize in terms of total finish. It's dead heat rules. And then there's a bunch of booby prize money in there, too. So, you know, most bogeys, worst score on a hole. You know, worst round of a player who made the cut gets a little bit of a slice. And so basically you come up with fun ways so that even the, you know, the truly horrific golfers out there are value to bid on. But it's a pretty top heavy, you know, it's a pretty top heavy endeavor. You know, you really want the winner. And I think ultimately, it's a narrow field this year, at least looking at the top of the board.
Well, yeah. So that's the first question was, is it just winner take all or is it like 1, 2, 3, but you're saying it's top heavy either way. So the strategies, the general strategies, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. And then I'm curious how you're going to approach this, the 88th Masters, which is you can spend a lot for the top guys and have, you know, sort of try to get that, or you can do the opposite, I guess, try to pick off some long shots that you think have a shot at winning this and not spend as much. What do you think generally is the Drew Dinsick approach this year?
Well, so again, it entirely depends on your role in the pool. Like if you are walking in and you know you're the biggest bag, go get the big boys, get a winner. If you walk in and you're small stack, then in general, you're trying to find the Brian Harmons of the world, right? Yeah. The guys who are kind of in that 30 30-ish range who you think can get into the top 10 just based on either form or course fit or whatever course history. You know, you have some reason to believe that this guy is ready to pop at this tournament and he's being underpriced. And so, you know, that tends to be the way that I play these. I have two or three runners that I think are capable of hitting the board and go get them. And ultimately, the more you populate a Calcutta pool with players, like, it becomes at some point, if you have so much of the pool, then you just end up playing defense and making sure that all of the players that get selected after you've populated your roster go for above your reserve price so that you're not the one that's ultimately putting liquidity in the pool. And so that gets fun and tricky, and it's funny to watch that when that happens sometimes during the bidding. But ultimately the more players you have, you're competing against yourself, right? Like there's a finite number of players who are going to, be in contention, and in a top heavy payout like that. You can sometimes, do a little bit damage if you get too many players. So it's a fun way to play the tournament. And, everybody is looking for, you know, kind of ways to get involved in betting these days, and Masters pools, they abound. But none have really taken hold, in the way that, you know, the NCAA bracket pools have. And I think a Calcutta pool, if you're exploring that, is definitely worth, getting involved in.
Yeah. NCAA survivors are great. Calcuttas are great, but they haven't taken hold like brackets, obviously. So Calcutta aside then, how are you betting this? Like, who do you like that might not be on everybody's radar?
I gotta keep all my my money in pocket for this pool. I haven't made a single.
True, it's
I haven't made
true. A single it's bet just yet. Us. Nobody's listening. Just us.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not trying. I'm not even about giving away secrets. I'm on a team this year where I have like a real deal golf originator with an edge. So I'm very hopeful that this is going to turn out well for me. But ultimately, the macro things that matter this year, you know, that you have a huge influx of new players with the, you know, all of these live guys who you know, are coming in with data from Lib that's somewhat questionable, and how exactly you synthesize a price is going to be a little bit challenging, even more than just coming up with a fair median. I think the big question on all the Lib guys is, what do you do with uncertainty? Like, how big of a bracket do you put around those guys? And does that make all of them unbettable? It probably is going to for me. I think the other kind of interesting question is, what do you do with the debutants, right? It's pretty clearly a course that, you know, it rewards the players who solve certain aspects of it. And that just takes reps. And you have a number of players this year who are at or near the top of the board, the Ludwig Obergs, the Wyndham Clarks of the world, who just, you know, they're expected to do well because they're playing incredibly, incredibly competitive golf right now. But, you know, having never experienced the actual, you know, conditions at Augusta and learning some of the secrets, it's easy to kind of toss those guys, in my opinion. So definitely kind of curious who's sticking their neck out with some of these debutants as opposed to sticking to just generally what works here.
Yeah, it's our annual chance to say the name Fuzzy Zeller, the last debutant, exactly. The last first-time player to win the Masters back in the late 70s, 1979. Whether I ask this question, and I'll probably ask it on the podcast too, I think the Live thing is fascinating because you do that. That is the real conundrum of this. How do you synthesize that to get a price? But the other one is, you know, whether Thursday's supposed to be rainy and windy, Friday windy a bit, and then the weekend's supposed to be beautiful. Do you wait to see, you know, the tee times and sort of bet accordingly, or is that a fool's errand?
No, this is going to be very important this year. I want Thursday PM, Friday AM players. I think they're going to have something close to a half a shot edge over the Thursday AM, Friday PM guys.
Very simple. Kelly, you see that the same way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still waiting, I guess, to look, check out the weather a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, Thursday's looking like it's going to be pretty ugly rain-wise. Yeah. That was definitely the wave that I thought would have the advantage yesterday. I didn't bet it completely that way, but that definitely were the advantages, like right, as of right now.
And do you earmark golfers, Drew, and you're like, okay, I would bet, I like these guys, I would bet them, but pre-flop number I don't like. I'm willing to sit back and see if they fall behind and then jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. This is particularly relevant for majors. I forget the actual number, but the proportion of the pot that comes in live at the major high liquidity shops is intense.
Massive.
It's like, yeah. 80% of the bets are made live. What? Like, so you're telling me the pre-flop numbers only constitute 20%? Okay, wow. Okay. So there's going to be players who shorten just because they're out first, and guys who haven't teed off yet who you're going to see a better price on just the Thursday afternoon.
And think about, you know, that. Honestly, yeah. Think about that. That's with the major where you have all winter to bet at pre-flop too. So should be a lesson or a guiding, you know, a guardrail, guiding post for all of this. We'll come back. Drew wants to talk some NBA. That's his favorite thing. We'll do that. See if he has any tennis bets also.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Please do at VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets and bets beyond today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Billen. I have a theory about the eclipse and as it relates to humans. Oh, first boy. Of all, did you catch solar eclipse fever yesterday?
I mean, you and I were texting about the news coverage we were watching. Wow, that was
fantastic,
something.
Fantastic, wasn't it? People really get religious-y spiritually when it comes to this. Now, here's the thing with the eclipse. This is just a sort of intergalactic accident that we are. The moon is like 1/400. Like the sun is 400 times the size of the moon, but we're at the perfect distance where it covers it perfectly on these rare circumstances. So it's just an accident, right? Like, it doesn't happen on other planets necessarily, right? But we are the perfect distance. So this intergalactic—I don't even know if that's the right word—accident. Accident
You're not using totality enough.
Oh, yeah. We got to use totality a million times on the show today. They used the word totality yesterday. I was like, okay, we get it with the totality.
Yeah, I've heard that word more yesterday than I did my entire life.
So two things. Like, we're in Vegas. Nothing happened, and yet people say something happened. So this happened to me when I was a kid in D.C., too. I am convinced that people are lying about what they're seeing, not in the totality spots.
Right.
But in the non-totality spots, I'm like, you didn't see anything.
All I noticed, Gil, was a very sunny day in Vegas yesterday.
That's what I noticed.
That's really all I noticed.
The other one is they had on CNN, they had this woman who's a reporter. Her dad was an astronaut. He was like howling at it the whole time. And he said he's waited 78 years to see a full total eclipse. And he was like, it was weather in one spot before, and he couldn't get to the other spot before. He's always trying to get to the spot. And I was just like, this man waited 78 years. Like, it's meant so much to him.
I found that one really interesting because that was, again, a astronaut.
Yes.
So, like, I'm led to believe he's been in space. Like, that seems like that would be a lot cooler than seeing a eclipse
from
the ground.
He said no. He said this would be cooler.
Yeah. It was.
And the first thing that popped in my head was, like, this is like a guy waiting 78 years to see the DirecTV logo hit the corner exactly. It's like what I could come up with. Drew Dinsick seems like an eclipse kind of guy. At whale _ capper. How you doing, man? You love the eclipse?
Oh, I'm great, man. I got a little caught up in the coverage yesterday. I liked your guys' breakdown better, though. That was funnier. And yeah, I mean, all kinds of interesting stuff going on right now. Earthquakes in New York City and earthquakes in Taiwan. Eclipses that happen once every, 30 years. This is pretty cool stuff. And I don't know. I didn't even think to make an effort to try to go see it. Now I feel in hindsight like maybe this was worth seeing.
What was my science follow-up question from last week for Drew? The quarry. The quarry.
Oh, yeah.
For your hard true. Where's the quarry at, Drew, where they come up with that quartz surface?
You don't believe me.
Which
I wanted to find the quarry.
It's in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yeah,
why
I
don't
still
you believe
can't find
me?
The individual quarry though. I need the name.
The Hartrue quartz that were in Charleston last week. It comes from a quarry in Virginia. And Kelly doesn't believe me. Apparently, that it comes from this quarry.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
okay.
It's all throughout the Southeast. Yeah. By the way, I feel like
never looked into that.
Drew comes to us, by the way, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. I feel like I should ask you about the New York earthquake. Can we do 20 seconds on this? Like, is that?
Yeah, sure.
Is that worrisome? By the way, Drew, can we say this out loud on air? Are we allowed to say this on air?
Of course.
Drew is a seismologist. I'm not just asking some schmendrick here. Does an earthquake in on that part of the country alarm you in any way?
No.
Okay.
No. There's no. There are random one-off. Smallish earthquakes like this in stable tectonic regimes all the time. This is probably like a once in 30-ish year thing, maybe a little longer. I'm sure there's been close to magnitude fives in the New Jersey area, Pennsylvania area before, and there will be again, but they're of no consequence to any type of critical infrastructure or tall buildings. They're just novelties.
Okay. Stable tectonic regimes, Kelly. That cash is for anybody who had that phrase on the show.
Yeah.
We talk about those way too much.
If you didn't know, there's clearly three very well-defined tectonic regimes, Gil. The stable tectonic, like in the eastern United States, then you have your active crustal, like we have in California, where you have your plate margin, we're obviously translational with all the strike slip faults, and then of course the subduction regimes where you have a subducting oceanic plate underneath the continental plate, like in the Pacific Northwest.
That was the most unbelievable paragraph ever uttered on this show. That was incredible. I have no idea what he just said. But yes.
I like the uncrustable one.
Uncrustable. I don't think he said that. I think it's a misquote. All right. Monte Carlo. So let's do a couple minutes on tennis, a couple minutes on basketball here. Tennis. We just found out, you and I together and Kelly, literally before this show, Carlos Alcaraz just pulled out of Monte Carlo. Heavily bandaged forearm, couldn't go. He's going to try to play in the clay tournaments right after this. He still is still a go for what comes here. But, like, first of all, what does it mean for Monte Carlo? And then what does it mean for the French Open, in your opinion?
Monte Carlo, it means that that Yannick Sinner has got to be a meaningful favorite. I know that the one seed Djokovic is playing well right now, but he is still way well out of form and tough to see that he's going to be sharp enough to get to a final against Sinner, let alone beat him. So Yannick Sinner would be the obvious look at the moment. He's the best clay player and the best overall player. He's the best overall tennis player on earth right now, and he's the best clay player in this field. With Alcaraz out, you know, in prepping for this, you're like, yeah, you excited for Monte Carlo? Like, yeah, all eyes on Alcaraz. We got to see if this injury is real.
Right.
It's real.
It's real.
He just pulled out.
That's right.
Oh. And then, yeah, similarly, we want to see Djokovic. We want to see what kind of form he's in. My expectation for Djokovic is he likes to kind of ramp up and try to peek around Rome and then take that form into Roland Garros. So if he plays well and then has like a shocker of an upset, you know, in the second or third match here, I won't be surprised. Monte Carlo is a little bit of a warm up for clay. Even though it has like tons of money and tons of points, and you would think that this has some sort of grand consequences in the scheme of things, it's just a chance for players to kind of get their legs under them on clay before we get to you know, Madrid and Rome, and Roland Garros, obviously the biggest prize on clay. And yeah, the fact that we don't have a healthy Nadal here stinks. The fact that we don't have a healthy Alcaraz here stinks, and I'm starting to get nervous that we're not going to get that matchup at all, and we may not see Alcaraz at his peak of his powers trying to take the crown from Nadal at the Roland Garros this year, which is going to be interesting because you know, if all of a sudden the world is tilting in the favor of Sinner and he continues to improve, you know, on the trajectory we've seen from post US Open last year to today, then you know, we could be in a very interesting place come Wimbledon with, you know, both majors in Sinner's back pocket.
Any tennis bets today?
I didn't play anything because I'm, again, kind of getting my feet under me on clay.
Okay. All right.
A lot of interesting observations from this tournament, surely. But I think, for sure, to this point, things are holding to form. And I'm interested to see what Arthur Fils looks like against Musetti. I think that game should be, I mean, that match should be closer to a pick-em right now. Fils is in the plus 163 range, which is intriguing. If I was going to have a bet on tennis today, that would be the only one.
I have two dogs, one already lost on Facundo Diaz Acosta against Roberto Bautista Agut, but I'm up a break in the Echeverry plus 140 over Nicolas Jarry. So hopefully it can eke out a win here. Any NBA plays?
I need some good karma here to get the Thunder a win against Sacramento. I don't care if it's by 5 points or more. Just beat the Kings, please. And then similarly, could really use a Phoenix win over the Clippers. I'm sweating out some big bets right now in a number of markets. The most substantial are miss the playoff markets, where I've taken big swings on the Pelicans at 6-1 to miss the playoffs. Kind of backed that up by playing Pelicans to be in the play-in at plus 125 as well. And so I would, you know, I don't think that's realistic to expect them to lose to Portland today, but I basically need all of the other teams that are kind of trying to get out of that play-in to find wins, including Phoenix. I think I also have completely capitulated. I just assuming Denver is going to get the one seed and that it's a walk-in here for Jokic MVP. And I played Denver to win the Northwest as aggressively as I could come up with a way into that market. And so I just need the Nuggets to kind of take care of business today and then beat the Timberwolves and take the one.
Okay. Next week, we'll talk a bunch of NFL draft. Drew, have you started betting anything?
Yeah, finally starting to see some just kind of some random props offshore, which is fun. Mostly positional markets. I need some defensive players at this point.
Overall,
we'll just put it that way.
Okay, we'll get into detail on that next week. You need some defensive players on a draft that is first round that is heavily projected as offensive. Drew, appreciate it. Appreciate all the bets, man. Good luck with all of them.
Absolutely. Best luck today, guys.
Drew Dinsick at Whale_Capper, Deep Dive, and Bet the Edge podcast. We'll come back, a little baseball with Mark Borchardt on the other side next.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
An action-packed fight card is taking over Las Vegas for UFC 300. And DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any UFC 300 bet. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Skill Alexander, it is Kelly Bidlin. We have so many tweets to get to. We have so many text, but let me just do text real quick. Lou Finicaro, by the way, says, Schmendrick, LOL, have not heard that in decades. You are welcome, sir. I'm glad someone noticed. This is from, I will read a couple tweets. This is from Brad Billups. Is there a Masters prop live winner versus PGA Tour winner?
Ooh.
No, but that'd be a good one.
I don't think I've seen that one. Yeah. There's like top live finisher, like all that stuff.
We have about 1,000 people trying to answer the question of is UConn the best team since 2000? We'll get to those later. The New Jersey, New York says, wait, I'm sorry. You're telling me that Danny Hurley, a man who has gotten into a fight with at least three separate fan bases in the last month and a half, is not a normal coach in his demeanor? He's a bit of a spaz, that's what I'm saying. Jeff Levine, watching UConn's performances touches other buttons. Their movement, obviously, coaching is as much art as it is sport. It is beautiful to see them apply such a selfless approach in such a smooth fashion. Nary a superstar among them. Just awesome. It's a great tweet. Jesse Welch. All right, guys. National championship's over. ANG's first segment is over. Now let's get back to why the hell can't Wemby win Defensive Player of the Year. It's funny you say that. Michael Montesano tweeting this morning. Also, this latest tweet from BKB. Wembanyama minutes played per game this year. Is less than 30. The average all-star minutes played per game is 35.1. If you projected his numbers over 35.1 minutes, he'd be averaging 29.6 points a game, 14.2 boards, 5.6 assists, 4.4 blocks, 52% field goal percentage, 33.3% behind the arc, and 83.1% free throw percentage. That is a MVP season is what that is.
Yeah.
Forget Defensive Player of the Year for that particular argument right there.
Live player to win plus 225 at DraftKings. No, minus 330.
Plus 225, yes, on a live player. Minus 330, no. Thank you, Kelly. At DraftKings. And then to the answer, by the way, Doug Montesano put in the question. I arbitrarily said the year 2000. So UConn the best team since 2000. He said 1999 Duke had the highest adjusted efficiency margin per KenPom. That's just offensive efficiency minus defensive efficiency at plus 43. I did say 2000 though, arbitrarily. And they lost to UConn in 99. But he did say 2015 Kentucky, which was the comp that we gave out earlier, plus 36.9 adjusted efficiency margin. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some baseball. Mark Borchardt from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert at Base Winner. BaseWinner.com. All things Base Winner. He also does the BetUS show every day. How you doing, Mark?
Doing good. I'm really excited about this race to 10. And it looks like Pittsburgh is really the front runner right now.
Yeah. So
it's such a cool bet.
So yeah. We were talking, Kelly and I were talking about this before the show. So right now, can we throw up the graphic? So I have a bet for best record. Let me restate that. Most wins in March and April. And I have the Cleveland Guardians at 65-1. Right now, the Pirates are 9-2. The Yankees are 9-2. The Dodgers are 9-4. Remember, they played extra games. The Guardians, who lost a game courtesy of rain in Minnesota, are 8-2. And then the Red Sox are 7-3. Those are the teams at the top. What you're talking about is the race to 10, which was widely available. DraftKings had it. And the Pirates have of the 9-win teams, Pirates, Yankees, Dodgers, they've got the early game today. So we were trying to figure out if anybody has a Buccos first to 10 number out there that they got pre-flop. We were trying to figure it out because we can't find it, but we know it's longer than 20-1. That's as much as we know.
It seemed like that would be something that Jason would have. I mean, it just does. I thought he loved the Pirates, so maybe he's got it.
Maybe. Didn't the Pirates have a great start last year too, Mark?
I don't know.
They did.
Possibly.
Yeah. They were like the first to 20 last year. The Pirates were. And then it just became, a typical Buccos season after that. But this is 2 years in a row where they had a great start. So congrats. If they get it done this morning, and that's a big if, of course, because then the Yankees and the Dodgers are up next this afternoon. But if they get it done, for anybody who has that bet, good on you for the Pirates first to 10. Did you dabble in any of these markets?
I bet the Dodgers. I split a unit. I bet the Dodgers a half unit. I think they were 250 plus 250. And then I bet the Braves at 12-1. And it looks like I'm going to have some racing luck to get that Dodgers in, but possibly. I'm rooting against the Yankees, obviously, and a little bit against the Pirates today, although I don't have that as a play. But I mean, it's exciting because it's like, okay, first of all, which game's going to finish first, right? And the Dodger game starts behind the Yankee game. So maybe you're praying for rain a little bit in that Yankee game, you know?
Their
game starts before it.
This didn't come into play, but it could have. I cashed a 15-1 on the Panthers to be the last team to win a game in the NFL. And had it been all things equal, which it wasn't in the end, I won it fair and square, but had it been all things equal, it's the first, it doesn't matter if it's the same day, it's the first team to get there that day, you know, so it's, that obviously would be reversed in the case of the last team to win, but in this case, it's more intuitive. Okay, and let me just say this again, that bet that I have March, April on the Guardians, and I would say this for anybody who has a bet like this, I am more obsessed with that bet than I am with anything else I'm doing. Every day I'm a massive Guardians fan. I'm locked into their games. I know their schedule. Like we just posted it up here. I know how many games each team has left, right? I know where the weather, like I was so locked into the weather in Minneapolis on Sunday because I'm like, oh, this is not going to happen. Like sweating weather because of this stuff. And then you're also, of course, a fan of the teams that are playing, the teams you're competing with. So these are awesome bets.
That's a great bet. That's almost even a bet. It's more of a sane bet, your bet, because you get a little bit bigger of sample. Yeah. But how cool, this wasn't going on, 25 years ago when we started. No, like maybe 20 years ago when we started, So
forget it. Remember, when we were doing it, they didn't have five-inning bets. Like, we forget about that. Nobody had five-inning bets when we started doing this, we act like we're 1,000 years old, but it feels that way. What did you bet today, Mark?
It does. Speaking of that Yankees team, I bet against him today. AJ Puck, I still have hopes for this guy. One of the things he's got is a really high strikeout percentage over his last 150 plate appearances. It's 31.3%. I took Miami at full game plus 177. The Yankees are, talk about an interesting team, Gil. If you look at the Yankees XFIP minus to date, they are 26th in the league and they're sitting at 9-2 in the standings. I don't know if that's even theoretically possible. Obviously it happened, but it's kind of like the talk about an outlier. And so I'm looking to fade the Yankees. I think that they're kind of overpriced in the market. And then I'm going to go with the favorite of the show, Gil. I know everybody loves the base winner parlay.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just not going to overthink it. I like Ronaldo Lopez and the Braves. Lopez looking, talk about 30% strikeout rate. He's at 31%. And then Savale for the Rays. This is so surprising. Every time I look at it, I think, gosh, there's an accounting error, but there's not. 32% strikeout rate over his last 150. I've got value on both games. I'm going to go ahead and risk one to win 1.81 units on that parlay, Gil.
All right, repeat the parlay again. It is
the Braves full game, Tampa Bay full game, a risk one to win 1.81.
Okay. Not an official segment until base winner gives his parlay of the day. But you are taking the Marlins straight. I caught that correctly.
I am. It's one of the things that I do on my site, and I want to pump my site up a little bit because I think this is cool, is the expected standings part. Where I can go ahead and look and see, well, what is this team supposed to be?
Love that.
And the Yankees are good. I mean, they're definitely hitting good. 121 weighted runs created plus to date. But they're 9-2. They should be 6.1 and 4.9. So I think that I want to play if the daily card shows value playing against these teams. then it makes sense to me. And I just think the Yankees are really overrated right now in the market, Gil.
Got 30 seconds. I want your answer to this question because I asked this of Spore yesterday. Obviously, latest pitcher now looks, you know, got the old sore elbow is Framber Valdez of the Astros, right? This on the heels of other huge names like Shane Bieber and obviously Spencer Strider. It's just every day it seems like it's some other big name. Does this make you not want to bet Cy Young props until much later in the season?
Oh, that's a really good point, Gil. I never really thought about it from that perspective, but yes. You know, when you're sitting on two games of Shane Bieber, it's just really elite levels. He had the best base winner ERA in baseball, and you're just excited about it because I had him to win the Cy Young. And now he's done. So now you're out. And yeah, so maybe that's a really good point. Something that I never even thought about, Gil. But yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly.
It's just so depressing, man. It really is. Mark Borchardt, everybody. Thank you so much. At Base Winner, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Gil.
My man. Best in the business. John Hasselbauer on the Masters. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.